Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. Week 15, the topic on the docket this week. I am your esteemed host, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by a man who needs no introduction, but we give him one anyways, the one, the only, Payne Insider.
I appreciate that. What a guy.
You know, I figured you'd still be riding an emotional high from your Dolphins' outright victory on Monday Night Football as double-digit pups against the New England Patriots.
Yeah, pushing us closer to that 8-8 record where we draft in the middle of the pack every year. Drives me nuts. Either be bad or be really good. You don't want to be in the middle.
There's nothing like no man's land when you talk about your draft prospects heading towards the spring. The San Francisco 49ers know a thing or two about that amid their recent win streak. Busy podcast on tap today, Payne. A little contest update and season leaderboard. One gentleman, 50 points so far this season. Pretty damn impressive. As always, want to thank all of you folks for the reviews on iTunes, your increased social interaction of late, favoriting and retweeting, sharing the love during this holiday season. We have Dave Mason here to talk about all things liabilities, Joes versus the pros, etc. And of course, the big game breakdown, but there is a little wrench being thrown in the big game breakdown. No, we're not diving into Colts and Broncos because that doesn't deserve enough of our attention. The last game we'll touch on, Patriots-Steelers, that'll most likely decide home field advantage throughout the AFC playoffs. So, Payne, we've lasted, what, 4 years, and we've covered all the Thursday night and Monday night games. We finally had a break from tradition this week.
This was a worthwhile audible.
Yeah.
Very, very good decision here, I feel like.
And we did get positive feedback last week. People feeling like we went into an increased level of depth as we, you know, trimmed one game off the traditional seven-game docket. So, Colts and Broncos didn't warrant it. We had, obviously, some interesting stuff arise in Carolina-Green Bay. But little to say, plenty to talk about, and we'll highlight the two standalone games on Saturday as well. But before we get into the games themselves, the housekeeping, let's announce the Week 14 winner. I think you have that information in front of you.
Yes, at DVOND, real name Mike. He was the Week 14 contest winner, 5-0, got the Monday night game, total score perfect. That's what ended up winning it. But as you alluded to at the top of the show, one guy has the outright lead, Jay Tennant, 55. He's got 50 points. Two people nipping at his heels there with 49, so it's going to come down to the wire. But 50 points so far in the contest, not too bad.
Pretty impressive, but it's not how you start in this business. It's how you finish. So 15 points still left on the board. Encourage all of those folks to try and get into the fold. And even if you're not eligible for the season-long crown, you do have a chance to win some weekly swag and sport your Bet the Board gear at your New Year's festivities. But all right, Payne, like we said, busy agenda on tap. Let's get right into the games, and we'll start with the afternoon tilt on Saturday with the Chicago Bears headed on the road to Ford Field to take on the Detroit Lions. Current number there, the Lions, a 5.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total 44 on this game. This is a rematch from a game played at Soldier Field earlier this season, a 27-24 Lions victory with Connor Barth missing a last-second field goal. And for the first time in his career, Mitchell Trubisky will encounter a division foe for the second time in the same season.
Where would we like to start with this? I actually am going to play off, and I don't know if you remember this, but you discussed Detroit and their inability to stop the run on Thanksgiving, I believe it was.
I feel like every time we talk about a Lions game, since Elodie Nada went down, I mean, that's where we normally start the discussion, that if a team can run the football against the Lions, it's going to put them in pretty good standing.
So I'm looking at this. Elodie Nada, the first five games of the season, they've only averaged, they allowed 3.3 yards per rush attempt for Detroit. That was fifth best in the NFL. So then Elodie Nada goes down, and they've slipped to 21st. They allow 4.2 yards per rush attempt. And when you start to dig into even the stronger metrics that are better to gauge success They're even more pronounced. You look at this explosive defense. First 5 weeks with Nada in, 39% of runs were grading successful. Top 10 in the NFL in explosive defense. It's really gone downhill since. 54% of runs now grading successful. 27th in explosive run defense. And when you're talking about Mitchell Trubisky, I get it. It's 2017. You have to weight your yards per play metrics in favor of passing. But when you have a young quarterback, if you can establish the ground game, it's going to make his job significantly easier. We saw in the Bengals game a lot of play action to the tight end, which works better when you're running. A lot of rollouts, which are one read, work a lot better when you can run the ball. And that's the MO of the Bears. They have to be able to run the ball. They did it in the first go round. They probably should have had a little more. They should have had a better result, I think, in that game. It could have got out of hand early, but Trubisky, I think, what did he do? He muffed the snap that got returned for a 27-yard touchdown. So it was 10-0, and the Bears had the ball. They muffed the snap. It gets returned for a defensive touchdown. And the game got a little distorted at that point. So Bears should be able to run the ball here.
The Bears were actually pretty outspoken, saying they know they let a glorious opportunity to win a divisional game at home slip through their fingers when they had a chance to put a stranglehold on that. So don't think that'll be lost in them. You mentioned Trubisky and his ongoing development obviously makes it much easier with a run game. We know what the real key was, Payne, to them beating the Bengals. They got my boy Kendall Wright finally involved in the offense. The often forgotten, often disrespected wide receiver with 10 catches in that contest.
Big game. Shaheen had a nice little game going. For me, I think that's a big win for them. For a young team that's been battling, you get a blowout win like that. I think we'll see a lot of confidence from the Bears, as you alluded to. They've been speaking like this is the game that they really want. They got another boost on Monday. Zach Miller showed up to the team facility. Supposedly practice has been fantastic this week. And we were talking about a Bears team that was kind of just playing out the stretch. Fox potentially being fired, most likely fired. There wasn't a ton to play for, but the young guys are starting to get playing time. They're starting to get some confidence off a blowout win. You see Zach Miller, a team leader. And so far, practice has been fantastic, everything that I've heard this week.
And that 33-7 victory over the Bengals, the Bears' most lopsided victory going all the way back to 2012. When we look at the other side of the ball, Payne, we know that the Lions get the huge edge at quarterback with Matthew Stafford and how one-dimensional they are. The Bears are down 5 defensive starters, but they will get Danny Trevathan back and gave them a little bit of bite. Eddie Goldman and Pernell McPhee status, we happen to know if those guys are going to be good to go or a situation to try and monitor with the Bears.
Trevathan was back last week, which was huge for them, and they do. They'll get a boost. Everything that I'm hearing is Goldman, McPhee, and Adrian Amos were all limited participants at practice so far this week. None played against Cincinnati, so potentially all three of those guys back, which is huge. And another boost, possibly, for the Bears' defense is when you look at the other side of the ball. The Lions are dealing with some injuries on their offensive front. Travis Swanson, TJ Lang, Rick Wagner, none of them have practiced so far this week. They've been beat up the last few weeks. They have played in some of those games. So you're going to want to monitor that, but none of those three guys are close to 100%. And I think Stafford, watching that game, he's as tough as nails. He's going to play. He came out, talked about how it really hurt him to miss some snaps during practice last week, but it goes to show you that the hand is really bothering him. I don't think he's 100%. It looks okay against the Buccaneers defense that's dead last in the NFL. They allow 50% of passes to grade successful. Let's see what it looks like against a semi-competent secondary for the Bears.
7 is where this number opened, as we mentioned, down to 5.5. Do we think we see more Bears money come in, or safe to say that this thing kind of settles somewhere in that 4.5, 5.5 dead zone?
Big move so far. At 5.5, looks like balanced action. I think the only thing that's going to move this now is potentially another dabble if professionals feel the Bears still offer some value. But at this point, the number's gone. And when you're talking about the Bears, listen, you want every single point you can get. 5.5 feels like a right number.
The market has corrected itself pretty quickly. You saw a massive move on Monday in the direction of the Bears. The nightcap on Saturday, an AFC West showdown that may ultimately decide division supremacy. It is the Kansas City Chiefs playing host to the Los Angeles Chargers. This game, a pick 'em at BetOnline.ag. Total on this game, 46. Payne, we know it's a second meeting of the season between these two teams. First meeting, Chiefs won pretty handily, 24-10, amid the Chargers' 0-4 start. But these two teams couldn't be more different now at this juncture in the season than what they were back then. Fortunately for the Chiefs, you know, they were able to right the ship at least for a week with a dominating effort against the Oakland Raiders last weekend. The Chargers, well documented, 7-2 straight up over their last 9 weeks, but this arguably their toughest test going into hostile territory.
Yeah, without question. And when you look at both sides of the coin, that's the first thing that I wanted to dig into. We all thought the Chargers were going to be good last year. We thought they'd be a good again to start this season. Then they go 0-4. We would love, I think me and you would love nothing more for them to be really good and kind of prove us right. When I'm looking at some of the teams the Chargers have played, it's not a great list of teams when you look at the schedule. They haven't beaten any of the good teams. As you alluded to, they lost to the Chiefs earlier in the season. They lose to Philly, they lose to New England, they lose to Jacksonville. The teams they've beaten, you know, Giants, Raiders, Denver, Buffalo with Peterman. You had Dallas without Zeke and Sean Lee, Cleveland and Washington. So this is the big test where we're going to find out what they are. The efficiency metrics look good. The Chargers, one of five teams that rank top 10 in both offensive and defensive efficiency. You're looking at the Eagles, Rams, Vikings, and Saints, the other four teams. So this is going to be a true test for them here. Tough environment Saturday night at Arrowhead Stadium. The fortunate thing is here, they're not going to deal with any of the cold weather, it doesn't appear. It looks like it's about 45 degrees at game time. So you're not going to deal with any crazy weather, which is certainly a factor when you talk about a team from Los Angeles.
When you look at Kansas City, I mean, we know that their run defense, so what ails that particular unit has been well chronicled. I mean, you diagnosed it early in the season, and it's bore fruit for us throughout the last handful of weeks. The only team that they've been able to hold under 100 yards rushing for a game is the Oakland Raiders, and Kansas City has done that twice. With San Diego's recent rededication to the ground game, and I know it doesn't necessarily show up in the numbers, but you watch, you see it opening up opportunities for Phillip Rivers in the passing game. Do we think that offensive balance is enough to get them over the hump against a team who we know is going to have a coaching advantage in Kansas City matched up against Anthony Lynn?
I think that's the big matchup, right? We know about the Chiefs' struggles to stop the run. Can the Chargers take advantage of that weakness? And I'll be honest, I'm not sure. You look at this, just 38% of the Chargers' runs grade successful this year. That's 29th in the NFL. And from everything that I've been told, and I wanted to watch this last week specifically in this game, the contract for Revis was sitting on his desk unsigned for months. And I think where the Chiefs organization decided to go was, hey, there's no one out there in free agency that's going to help us bolster the run. But if we can pair Revis with Peters in attempt to stop the run by just leaving two corners on an island and throwing everybody into the box, that's something that potentially could work. So now you get Peters back from suspension. Revis filled in admirably last week, had 92% of the snaps. If you can get them playing island football and you can dedicate more guys to the trenches, that's something that we certainly want to see bear out. Let's see if that's something that, you know, whoever wins this game is going to make a playoff run. If the Chiefs end up winning it, let's see if they can shore up that area by just dedicating more guys to the box.
What do you make of some of the issues the Chiefs have faced in the red zone? I mean, 28th in the league in terms of converting red zone drives into touchdowns at under 45%. This season in their six losses, only three touchdowns on 12 drives into the, you know, that part of the field. Is this, you hate to simplify a potential matchup, but it's just boiled down to the Chargers' ability to get touchdowns when they have opportunities and holding the Chiefs to field goals?
It's both, right? I think that's one of the biggest things in football, obviously. And it's going to sound, you know, dumb to the listeners. You know, you got to score touchdowns, but that's the key. And in this one, it's going to come down to which team converts their trips inside to the 20 into touchdowns. And it's not just Kansas City. We're looking at them right now, 28th in the NFL, 44% of red zone trips end in touchdowns. Well, guess what? The Chargers are 29th in that category. Just 43% of their trips inside the 20 convert to touchdowns because they've had issues running the ball successfully. So whoever wins that matchup, whoever can convert for touchdowns, They're going to have a huge edge in this game.
It should be a great game to watch on Saturday night. Obviously, the winner takes a stranglehold in that division. You look at the Chargers' upcoming games from here, a road game at the Jets next weekend, and they'll finish with a home date against the Raiders. Kansas City, maybe a little bit more manageable, home game with the Dolphins, and an awfully tricky spot week 17, should the game mean something, on the road against their heated rivals in the Denver Broncos. As we move towards Sunday, the big story in the National Football League this week, Payne, Aaron Rodgers, triumphant return, or at least we're led to believe, for the Green Bay Packers. It's Carolina, a 2.5-point favorite. Lay $1.20 at betonline.ag. Total 47 when Green Bay comes to town. We've seen their playoff odds get slashed. We've seen sports books here in Las Vegas take the Packers from 200-1 to win the Lombardi Trophy all the way down to 20. But let's start with the obvious. What should we be expecting from Aaron Rodgers after taking 2 months off from seeing live bullets?
It's tough to say. You know, I think if you're expecting him to be 100%, it's probably not going to be the case. Everything that I was told was Rodgers is going to be about 80% in this game. It takes 6 months to fully heal the collarbone injury. They knew this was his plan to play when they were giving him the surgery. So they went in and added reinforcements. They gave him a second plate, extra screws for stabilization to the collarbone. Now, obviously, he's the most talented quarterback potentially of all time, and certainly, you know, he's going to make some flash spots where, you know, it looks good in the highlights and everyone's going to think he's 100%, but I think there'll be some ring rust on him. And you look at the Panthers defense, they're going to be able to apply some pressure here. They're number one in adjusted sack rate, 40 total sacks this season. I want to see what Rodgers looks like after he takes his first hit and he has to pick himself up off the ground. Let's see what it looks like there.
We've seen the market. I mean, it opened at 2.5. It got as high as 6, 6.5 at some shops out here in my neck of the woods before Rodgers has that Instagram post saying he's been cleared. Number comes crashing back down. Fair or foul in terms of what this number has done and what's it's reflected, and could it potentially create some value if you want to go against the grain and look to back Carolina here at a modest price under a field goal? Knowing I know exactly where the Panthers are at this point, whereas Rodgers remains the wild card, that it could be a feast or famine type scenario.
Yeah, I think the initial adjustment we made was Rodgers to Hundley was a 10-point gap. We were a little aggressive in that because we had seen what had transpired in previous years. I think maybe towards the end when it appeared everyone was playing their balls off so Rodgers could come back and play meaningful football, it was roughly like 9 points for us. And then when you factor in probably some of the rust, an 80% Rodgers for this week's game, I think we made about a 7-8 point upgrade. So we initially had, and I'm looking at this now, Carolina would have been about 8.5, 9 if Hundley was the guy this week. So now we're looking at 2.5, 3. So, you know, for us in terms of value, right, the 3 is key, the 7 is key. 7, 8 points in value is, I think, what we made it. It was interesting to see the market react. I think that came in Tuesday night, and I was tracking this 7 minutes from the time Aaron Rodgers sent out the IG post to the time it hit the Dom Best screen. It went from about 6.5 back down to where we stand now at soft 3 or juice 2.5.
Oh, I was sitting in the stands watching the Las Vegas Golden Knights put together a shitty performance against the Carolina Hurricanes, trying to get on the mobile apps with your text to see if any of those prices were available. But books were a little bit quicker than I was with my thumbs trying to be able to get down on a particular number. So it didn't afford me the opportunity to do what I would have liked. So either way in this game, when we look at the ground games for these two teams, Payne, Carolina has been resurgent on the ground. The last 7 games, they've gone over 100 yards rushing. The last 3 games they've played at home, they've gone for more than 200 yards rushing, and a lot of that attributed to Jonathan Stewart over his last 4 games, averaging just shy of 5 yards per carry and 5 touchdowns. But on the other side, we've seen Jamal Williams kind of grow into the role, not exactly a game-breaker for the Packers, but giving them at least enough balance with Brett Hundley at the helm.
Yeah, Jamal Williams, I think he is the kid out of BYU, right?
Yep, he is indeed the one and the same.
He's been okay. Now, I watch a lot of these games 2 and 3 times. And I know the fantasy guys are loving him. He's got 5 touchdowns the last 3 games. You throw in the film, though, and he's not getting much more than what's blocked for him, quite frankly. Since he started getting a majority of the reps for Green Bay, he's averaging like 3.7 yards per rush attempt the last 5 weeks. So
That's Le'Veon Bell territory.
He is having some success catching the ball out of the backfield. But Green Bay, they've been able to move the ball on the ground this year. When you look at some of those metrics, number three in rushing success rate, the offensive line's been fantastic. They've been the quiet surprise. Fifth in adjusted line yards right now. So it doesn't matter who's really running behind that offensive line. It's been pretty successful. And I think they'll have some success. One thing I will say is Carolina the last few weeks, they've been giving up some explosive plays. Since week 11, 22nd in explosive play run defense, 20th in explosive play pass defense. And that's one thing that they're going to be faced with Aaron Rodgers, whether he's 80% healthy or not. He's going to take some shots. He's going to be more aggressive. He's going to attack deeper down the field. And there's about a 35-point gap in terms of passer rating on deep throws from Rodgers to Hundley. So that'll be a big thing here. And you mentioned this, and this is spot on. The Panthers' ground game has been improving as well. I'm looking at this since week 8. Carolina, 4th in rushing success rate, 51% of runs grading successful. And I think that's huge because the passing has been a disaster. 27th in the NFL over that same stretch. It does look like, at least last week, Funchess is learning to be a professional. That's the biggest thing that I've seen so far is if they can get Funchess going, the ground game opens up a little bit more. There's actually a threat. But Cam is getting going as well. It's late in the season. These games are more meaningful. This is the playoff push. So you're seeing Cam really put the onus on him to use his legs a little bit more. And one thing that I was surprised in, I know what the yards look like, and those have been outstanding the last few weeks, but the success rate really means a lot more, in my opinion, because it shows that they're doing it consistently. When you start to look at some of like the overall rush numbers, Cam's been explosive in that category, so it's going to distort some things a little bit. He's had, I'm looking at this right now, the explosive runs, like the last 5 weeks, 62, 69, 34, 32. So he's had some explosive runs, but they're doing it successfully as well with the ground game. So that's huge because, to me, they don't have a ton of great weapons. We know Samuels went down. Greg Olsen's trying to battle through this foot. He looks like a shell of himself. I wouldn't expect much from him moving forward at this point.
You're a shot taker. I give you 6-1 on the Packers to make the playoffs. Are you betting on them to be included in the 6-team tournament, or do you think they're on the outside looking in 3 weeks?
Ooh, that's a good question. 6-1, is that your number? Is that what's really out
there? I may have poked around a little bit to see what the going rate is.
Let me just glance here at the stand. So there's 7. Oh.
Games against the Vikings and at the Lions to close out the regular season after this weekend against the Panthers.
6-1. Man, this is a big week. Oof. I mean, it's not a horrible bet. They're certainly in the running. I probably wouldn't place the bet, though.
One thing I will say that we've seen a lot of books, especially out here, have really shortened the numbers on them to win the Super Bowl. So for all those folks looking to try and get on the Aaron Rodgers bandwagon, knowing that the Packers will most likely have to win, what is it, 7 games for those of us that are mathematically challenged like myself, a money line rollover is going to give you a much healthier return on investment than taking 20 to 1.
We discussed this. We discussed this, I think, a few weeks ago. You're like, is it worth taking 200-1? Is that what I saw at some point?
Yeah, there was a 200-1. I think it was Westgate that offered 200-1 out here.
Gotcha. Yeah, that would have been okay.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been a bad ticket to have in your pocket. Now, I'm not sure you would have thought Brett Hundley was capable of leading this team to back-to-back overtime victories. But say, every now and again, you need things to break the right way.
The schedule is soft the last 2 weeks. But yeah, Hundley's not very good.
Survive in advance, baby. That is the name of the game. And that'll be the same story that resonates out in the Pacific Northwest, where Seattle plays host to the Los Angeles Rams. The Seahawks are 2.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Paying total on this game, 47. First, let's talk about the number. I mean, we saw some shops open the Rams as 1.5-point road favorites. BetOnline.ag, not nearly as aggressive, but the number has gone from pick out to minus 2.5 amid some major injury concerns for both sides.
We talked a little bit, I think, on Monday about this. Pure, straight, math-based power number. Seattle minus 2 is correct before factoring in any other handicapping variables. So it's not a bad number.
So you think the market corrected itself the way it needed to be corrected? Because we have seen some resistance when we've seen 3 flicker at some locations.
Yeah, as it gets closer, as it gets closer to 3, I get Seattle's all in. But there's some advantages, and those are some of the variables that I'm talking about. And so, listen, this is a tough game from this perspective. Seattle's been there before. They've done it. This is their all-in effort. They must win this game. That's the reality of the situation. And we've talked about not really being true believers in the Rams, but there are some matchup concerns here. And a few weeks ago, and this will shock some people, and I can't believe I'm going to even say this, Carson Wentz couldn't take advantage of the secondary. And Doug Peterson didn't have a very good game plan to attack that secondary. Blake Bortles, though.
Even when he's on the sidelines, you can't refrain from taking a shot at Carson Wentz and his ability.
No, I like Carson Wentz.
I love the Wentz. I love the Wentz wagon.
They're going to win a Super Bowl with him once Doug Peterson isn't their coach. But
bring back Andy Reid.
When you look at there's a lot of matchup advantages here for the Rams, and I wanted to look at this a little bit deeper. Since Sherman and Cam suffered their season-ending injuries against Arizona. So week 11 and onward, Seattle's secondary, 24th in explosive passing defense, 21st in passing success rate defense. They've also had trouble stopping the run again. It did improve a little bit, bringing in Sheldon Richardson from the Jets, but now, in that same time frame, 45% of runs are grading successful the last four games. That's 19th. We need to paint this Seattle defense in its current form, and it's a below-average defense. And when you start to look at this, Bobby Wagner, he could be potentially out for this one. KJ Wright, he hasn't practiced either this week. Wagner is fantastic. He is astounding. He should be in the discussion for Defensive Player of the Year. He leads the league in solo tackles, but he also leads the league with just one missed tackle all season. So already, with these two guys in the fold, Seattle is a below-average defense after you talk about some of those guys in the secondary being out. If they're out this week or not 100%, it becomes incredibly tough.
The Rams aren't without some injury concerns in their own right. Robert Woods looks like he's going to be able to go, which will bolster the receiving core that, just to my untrained eye, has lacked a lot of pop over the last couple weeks. But some concerns on the offensive line. Rob Havenstein and Andrew Whitworth, both MCL injuries, should be good to go, but something to keep in mind there. Props to Andrew Whitworth for donating 600 bikes to a local elementary school students. And then you look on the defensive side, no Kayvon Webster for the Rams. Obviously, we feel like the potential absences the Seahawks may be dealing with on the defensive side are going to be more paramount to what the Rams may be faced with.
Right, yes, I would think so. And the Rams have taken a different practice approach again this week. They dealt with the fires a week ago. McVay said, hey, I thought our guys were really rested. It helped out. It's the latter part of the season. There's been a lot of travel going on with the adjustments to new locations and things like that. So they didn't practice again yesterday. Whitworth seems like he's a go. McVay has come out, said he's good. So it seems he seems closer than Havenstein. So, you know, there was a lot of inaccurate reporting as it came to the Rams this week, because initially those guys were out with ankle injuries. We now know their knees. Tremaine Johnson is also dealing with a neck injury and not a concussion, like a lot of people were saying. Kayvon Webster, he's out. He's having a good season for him. He's an average cornerback. You'd certainly love him in the fold, but now he's out for the season. So that is a loss. The Rams defense, there's some question marks there in general. I know a few weeks ago they were tipping the charts on the efficiency metrics. Now that the competition's heightened a little bit and you look who they faced, Vikings, Saints, Eagles, and you cannot forget the Blaine train over the last month.
Always, always respect the Blaine train.
Which you did not.
Sometimes. Blaine tried to give that game away for not only you, myself, and all of our loyal listeners that had the Cardinals plus three against the Titans. We had to rely on a 42-year-old kicker banging field goals from ridiculous distances because Blaine Gabbert can't get into the end zone from inside the 10-yard line.
He did miss Fitzgerald wide open.
Yeah, but that's a throw you make 9 out of 10 times every year in your Turkey Bowl.
I would agree. And suddenly, you know, with the heightened competition, LA's defense drifting towards being average in many of the key metrics. So that's something to watch here. But in general, like the last few years, we have seen this Rams team have great success against Seattle. I think they've won 4 out of the last 7, and they've had far less coaching. And I think they were going against far better versions of Seattle This was a matchup early in the year. If you remember, we talked about it. The scoreboard said Seattle won, but reality was the Rams outgained Seattle by 1.6 yards per play in that game. They just couldn't punch the ball across the goal line. Goff had some costly turnovers. So this is a tough one for me. Again, all-in effort here for Seattle. This is their season. They're at home. They've been in this position before. It's tough not to want to back the team that's been to war before and come out the other side versus a young team that hasn't quite been in a game this large. But at 3, I think we're going to see some support for the Rams.
Last thing on this game. If I'm looking at these two teams, we know what's at stake. More pressure on the Rams to go win this game on the road and try and get, you know, turn the corner and announce that, hey, we're going to be relevant in the NFC, or more pressure on the Seahawks to kind of maintain that aura that this franchise has built up over the last 5 to 7 seasons?
Again, I think it's a big game for both, right? Because Seattle wins this game. They're both 9-5 at that point. They have the tiebreaker in the division with the head-to-head matchups. So, you know, all week we've heard like, hey, Seattle's season's on the line. They can't lose this one. You know, the Rams are playing for something here, too. They're not just out there frolicking around in the rain. This is a big game for them as well. So, I don't know. This is, I don't think there's an advantage of you know, one team showing up more than the other, or this game being more meaningful to one team than the other. This is a big game for both these teams. I initially looked at, right, we've kind of hinted at this, the Rams defense regressing a little bit. Certainly that Seattle defense, the market not quite still at this point catching up to what their current form is. And so at 47, there was some value there, but it looks like at kick, there's going to be some weather here. So definitely something we're monitoring. And I think you should do as well. But if there's clear skies here, and I get how big this game is, the magnitude of the game and some issues that Seattle's had offensively, could be some points in this one.
As if there wasn't a reason to have two TVs every Sunday for the early and late games, this is going to be a Sunday that you want to have the Rams-Seahawks on one TV and the Patriots-Steelers on the other. For our listeners, though, we'll get to the Patriots-Steelers. That's part of our big game breakdown brought to you by the American Sports Betting Coalition. So let's hit the Sunday nighter before we get to that one, Payne. And this is an interesting matchup. We've seen some major line movement here as well. Dallas, a 3-point road favorite as they head up to the Bay Area to take on the Oakland Raiders. Total in this game, 46 at betonline.ag. I'll ask you first and foremost, are you surprised by the strength of this line move so quickly, knowing both teams' seasons kind of hang in the balance? Dallas, obviously, a much better chance to control its own destiny.
There was one group that did nibble Dallas, and it was more than a nibble for them.
I'll say pick to -3 is, feels like it's a little more than a nibble, even with an early week move.
That was one book. Now, there's other places that mostly, the majority opened this game, Dallas -2.5.
Sure, true.
And the one place that flickered soft 3.5 did not last. That went quickly. There is going to be a battle in this game. That's very clear. One group really likes Dallas under a field goal. One group is probably going to take, from what I'm hearing, they're okay taking 3. They nibbled some 3.5 when it showed. I don't know where we want to go, but I can understand right now Dallas has got the hype train going. They feel like they're back in the fold here. You're staring down Zeke Elliott coming back. This is a massive game for them. Sean Lee has been lights out for this team. And so you start to look at the metrics of Dallas when their key cogs play, and most of them are playing this game. That's partly why we have seen this move, because the metrics for Dallas, frankly, are pretty fantastic when they're healthy. I'm looking at this right now. Dallas 6-1 in games Sean Lee has finished this year. The lone loss in the season came at Denver in elevation when Zeke and everyone looked like they were extremely out of shape. You remove that game, the 6 remaining games Sean Lee finished, Dallas allowing 12.6 points per game. So it's a completely different team with Sean Lee, with Tyron Smith, and again, with Zeke back next week. The one thing that stunned me here is Zeke is fantastic. He definitely does more things than run the ball. But Alfred Morris has done a pretty good job. They've still been able to run the ball. The problem is they got so far behind in some of those first few games that Zeke mixed that they couldn't really keep the ground game going. But you look right now, before Zeke left, Dallas' offense, number one in rushing success rate. The last 5 games Zeke's been out, they're still number one in rushing success rate. 55% of runs grading successful. So when they're tight, and in the game and they can stick with the run, they've been pretty good.
And you did see Rod Smith get in the fold as well with the backbreaking play from, you know, what felt like 80 yards out against the Giants a week ago. Dak Prescott, of course, a career-high 3 touchdown passes. And if you believe his owner, Jerry Jones, this has been a maturation process for Dak, trying to figure things out without Ezekiel Elliott in the backfield. You mentioned Sean Lee. He wasn't just good. He was awesome last week against the Giants. 20 tackles in the win. Played 66 of 80 snaps. Interesting that the Cowboys have said they're going to look to try and rest him when they have the opportunity to make sure they can keep that hamstring healthy. On the other side of the ball, we look at the Raiders. And obviously, you do more reading than I do on a lot of these games. But I found this quote interesting from Donald Penn. We went out there and laid an egg last weekend. We have to make it better this week. That shows you what true men are, how we bounce back from this. We laid an egg last week. I can't wait to get back out there and play another game and try to put some good stuff out there and get a win. I don't want to just sit here and sulk all week. That won't do me any good. This is the Raiders' final home game of the regular season, and I don't think they're going to get a home game in the playoffs either. Do we think we finally get the Raiders at their absolute best, an all-in type performance, like we saw that fateful Thursday night where we needed every second to be able to cash our Raiders tickets against the Chiefs?
If they don't, you kind of need to remove your extension offer you gave Jack Del Rio.
Which you probably shouldn't have given him anyways, but that's a different topic for a different day.
Correct. And for Donald Penn, I mean, the onus is on him and the offensive line. They were flat out bullied last week at Kansas City. So, you know, it's always fun to hear player quotes. Did you look at yourself in the mirror? Be self-aware. The reason you got your ass kicked last week was the Oakland offensive line was horrific. They got absolutely demolished. And the offense has been inconsistent. We touched on that a little bit last week. Derek Carr hasn't been great this season. I know everyone thought he was going to be the second coming. Let's see. I know he's dealt with some injuries. His receiving core hasn't been totally reliable. Third in the NFL in drop passes. But one thing I have noticed is Derek Carr doesn't like to hang on to the ball and allow things to progress. It's get the snap, read, release. And many of the times, it's a detriment to letting things play out, letting things develop. I was looking at some of these explosive play metrics, 20th in explosive play passing, 28th in passing success rate offense for Oakland. So a lot of this is a team that we knew coming into the year was going to be reliant upon their offense. We weren't expecting anything from their defense. Their defense was bad last year. If they could have somehow improved to the middle of the pack and the offense stayed the same, this was going to be a dynamic team, but the offense has really regressed. Derek Carr has really regressed. The offensive line has really regressed. So it's on them at this point. It really is.
And it looks like no Amari Cooper this week. I mean, we saw him go down in extreme pain last weekend with the ankle injury against
Kansas. How dumb was that, by the way? Did you watch the game more than I did? He didn't come out and warm up. Then he got some things going. I got a text message like he didn't want to wrap his ankle because it was so uncomfortable. So it's like,
you know, sometimes, you know, athletes are a fickle breed when you're used to playing a certain way. I mean, yeah. I understand where they're coming from because we've all done stupid things, obviously not at that same level. But when you nurse those injuries, you never want to feel like you have a bulky brace out there that it's going to limit some of your mobility. But if you're playing at this level, you have to take those precautions, I would think, to give your teams the best chance to win. And, man, he crumbled like a pile of bricks. Now, he was rolled up on, so it wasn't something that just kind of happened. But it looked pretty bad for an injury that was already nagging him.
But yeah, so he had the ankle injury going in, and they advised him, like, hey, you're going to have to wrap this thing up. You're going to have to take some precautionary measures here. Didn't want to do it. Now, all of a sudden, an ankle injury that he was healing from is now in high ankle injury. Like, it'll be interesting to see how quickly this comes about. Where do we want to go from here in this game? I don't know. Do you believe in the Dak stuff? Have you? I mean, you've been watching.
I mean, I don't really believe it, and I'm not going to fully sign off on this Dak nonsense yet. I mean, I watch a game against the Redskins. They are average at best, and it's always easy to play from a lead. Against the Giants last week, he definitely looked better. There were some drops early on in the game. He connected with the big play before the half to Dez Bryant, which allowed him to play with a little more confidence. And then I think when you're going against a team where you're not playing from behind, it's much easier to make those throws, make those reads. And he did find Rod Smith as they spread him out for the backbreaking play for the Cowboys to really distance themselves from the Giants. But I'm not sure I'm ready to take the next leap and put him in the same class as a downfield passer or pocket presence like a Carson Wentz and what I've seen from him this year, or even a Jared Goff. So I got to see more of Dak before I officially believe in it. I do think that obviously he's been forced to go out of his comfort zone a little bit more as they lean on that passing game, because I know you just said that the rushing metrics are strong. You watch this Cowboys offense. They clearly miss the big play potential of Zeke. It's more 3 to 4 yards and a cloud of dust than anything else.
And that's exactly it. There's not the explosiveness there. The success rate stuff is there. The explosiveness is not. We'll see if Dak has taken that step, because he's going to have some opportunity here against Oakland secondary. 28th in passing defense. They allow 48% of passes to grade successful. I am not, like you, on the Dak train quite yet. I was looking at some of these numbers, and he didn't have to do anything against the Redskins. He completed only 50% of his passes for 102 yards, 4.6 yards an attempt. And we were both on the Giants last week, so this isn't going to come off salty, but just reality. That was a 10-10 game at one point. It was more the explosive plays. You had the 50-yarder to Beasley on a screen pass. You alluded to the Dez play there for 54, I think it was. And that was just a corner being overly aggressive, trying to like jump a route, and he just flat out whiffed. And then Jason Garrett, to his credit, I know we like to bash Jason Garrett a lot, but he had the perfect play call on. The Giants were coming with the blitz. It was a quick 4-yard dump off to Rod Smith, and he went and did the rest of the work for 81. So there still wasn't a ton of air yards. Those were minimal. And that's really partly where how you want to gauge some of these quarterbacks. It's much easier to throw up these gaudy numbers when you're throwing a screen to Beasley or a 4-yard dump off to Rod Smith that goes 81. He's going to have to make some plays in this game.
Yeah, I'm not putting Dak's performance against the Giants in the same class as Big Ben on Sunday Night Football by any stretch of the imagination. We talked about this number. It'll be interesting to get one man's take on it, because I'm sure there'll be a sweat from the sportsbook side, so we may as well bring him into the fold. He joins us every single Thursday throughout the NFL season, and you can follow him on Twitter at DaveMasonBOL. And Dave, we know the Patriots have normally been a thorn in the book side, but come on, give it to us straight. Monday night had to be a great result for you boys.
Yeah, it was massive. We finally won some primetime games the last couple weeks, including that was a big one on Monday night. Not only the spread, I think about 67% of the money was on the Pats, but the it killed a ton of teasers, so everybody was teasing the Patriots down. So, yeah, it was a big result. We did great in NBA that night, too, so that was one of our biggest day nights in a while. So, yeah, overall, it's a really good weekend for NFL. Everybody knows how challenging the NFL has been the last couple months, but the last couple weeks have been decent. The Falcons were great on Thursday night, Jaguars, 49ers, Broncos, and, of course, the Dolphins. Bad Chiefs, Eagles was bad, and the Packers sent the Browns. We were Browns fans as usual, and they just stuffed. Unreal. So, yeah, the Packers really stuck it to us on Sunday afternoon.
Before we get to Week 15, the season's in its later stages. How are any liabilities looking for future bets, Super Bowls, you know, anything of that nature? Any prop bets giving you the house a big sweat?
Well, yeah, I mean, talking about, speaking of the Browns, we had that one out there. You know, we had two different props. We had will any team go 0-16 at the beginning of the season before Week 1 kicked off? And you know, that's like those. Say, when you offer those, it's just like, will there be a safety in the Super Bowl? Everybody just bets the yes at, you know, plus 800 or whatever it was. I can't recall exactly, but it was right around there, plus 800, that a team will go 0-16. So we took 94% of the bets were on a team going 0-16. So that's not only it. Then once the season kicked off and the Browns were sucking as usual, we offered for the Browns to go 0-16. And, 99% of the bets have been on the Browns going 0-16. So yes, not only were we rooting for the Packers because of the spread last weekend, but also because we had that couple of those prop liabilities out there too. So, you know, that's the biggest sweat right now from the prop standpoint, now that John Gruden didn't get the Tennessee job. So that was the biggest prop sweat ever, man. That was crazy. But it didn't even come close, but it was enough to make our guys sweat a little bit. But, yeah, so the 0-16 props, the two of them are we're keeping an eye on those right now.
That's interesting. As we transition to Week 15, a lot of big games this week. Where's the public coming in, and have you seen any sharp action to this point?
Yes, we have seen some sharp action. We got
Love
the Broncos.
It.
Yeah. get your notebook out, pen. Broncos minus one was sharp. That's, they're up to 2.5 tonight. Browns, as usual. These sharps love the Browns, man. +7.5. They're now +7. Well, maybe, hopefully this is the week. Actually, no, I hope this isn't the week because I have the Ravens defense on my fantasy football team this weekend. Chiefs +1. They're now pick. Steelers +3, -110 or better. They're now +3, -115. As far as public is concerned, tons of big exposures out there tonight will be Colts fans. 72% of the action's on the Broncos. 67% on the Panthers versus the, yeah, the Panthers. 82% are on the Ravens at the Browns. 75% are on the Patriots. That's going to be a huge game Sunday at the Steelers. 77% is on the Cowboys. That's the Sunday night game, so that'll be a huge sweat on Sunday night. And then Monday night will be even a bigger sweat, as 89% of the early bettors are on the Falcons at the Buccaneers.
We know you love those primetime home underdogs and rooting for some of the dregs of the NFL, Dave. If players got beat up a little bit last weekend with all those teasers and everything going to the New England Patriots, what are the best ways and some of the options available for them to reload? Or for some of our new Bet the Board listeners, if they're looking to become first-time depositors at betonline.ag just in time for bowl season, how can they go about doing so?
Yes, sir. Head on over to promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard. We have a couple bonuses there for you. If you do not have a betonline.ag account, sign up for one. Use promo code 75BTB and we'll give you a 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account and have not used the reload bonus yet, the Bet the Board reload bonus, use promo code 50BTB for one-time 50% reload bonus. The maximum bonus is $1,000 on each of them. Once again, the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard. One last thing. We're going to have a bowl contest coming on the site maybe tomorrow, definitely by early next week. We're going through the final testing on it, so hopefully tomorrow. It's $10,000 in cash is going to be on the line. It's going to be a bowl pick'em contest. It's going to be the $10,000 Bitcoin bowl bash. So get on over to betonline.ag and get your accounts funded and participate in that.
You got any more details for us, like what you have to do to try and win this, what you have as far as being able to qualify for it, Dave?
Absolutely. I do have some details for you. It's going to be a pick 'em. We're going to do it on the last 20 bowl games minus national championship game, since we don't know who is in that yet. So basically the second two games, it starts on the 27th, the two night games. Those are the first games will be in the pick 'em. There'll be 20 games. $10,000 cash, top 10 qualify for the cash. First place pays $3,500. You just got to be active. You got to bet at least $20 within the month of December, pretty much from December 11th onward to qualify for prizing. Now, here's the thing. It's called the Bitcoin Bowl Bash. You have to enter your Bitcoin address. That's why we're going to send you the winnings. So you make your picks, you enter your Bitcoin address, and if you win, we're going to send your $3,500, let's say, to that Bitcoin address. So if you don't have Bitcoin, that's another motivation to get on board the Bitcoin train.
Will you be sending a picture of your Bitcoin boner to the winner as well?
You're entering the contest right now as we speak. I can
tell you. he's loading up with multiple entries. He's got his IP address changer just going wild right now.
Who do you like in a Rose Bowl, Payne? Who do you like in a Rose Bowl?
I've already put in two, and you know what? That's the perfect timing because people will be able to listen to our Bet the Board Bowl podcast hopefully around that time. So get a couple winners there. Enter the Bitcoin Bull Bash from betonline.ag. That's quite the alliteration. He's a great follow on Twitter. You can find him at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Dave, best of luck with all things NFL week 15, my friend, and we'll chat with you next week.
All right, fellas. Take care.
I know we haven't covered the game yet, Payne, because we're going to get to it right now, but are you at all surprised that 3 out of every 4 tickets are coming in on the New England Patriots laying points on the road at the Steelers this weekend?
Surprising? I don't know. I mean, I think all the metrics are out there about Tom Brady rebounding off a loss and New England rebounding off a loss. I think that's out there. This is still, when you had the opening price, right, it was 1 some places, 2, 2.5 other places. That's what? You just have to win the game, basically. And so when you're in that mindset of the biggest game of the week. There'll be a ton of public action. All you effectively have to do in their minds is pick the winner. It's not that shocking. Pittsburgh hasn't been that impressive.
It is the big game breakdown this week, brought to you courtesy of the American Sports Betting Coalition. 6 out of 10 of every Americans are in favor of ending the federal sports betting ban. The ASBC aims to educate, advocate, empower, and deliver information to those parties interested in learning more about legalization. For more information, go to sportsbettinginamerica.com. And Payne, we talked a little bit about, obviously, where Dave comes at from the bookmaking side of things. New England, a 3-point favorite at betonline.ag, a little bit of reduced price, lay $1.05 on the chalk. Total on this game, 54. And if we start with the number, I mean, fair or foul with the Patriots installed in this, I know a lot of our listeners are going to extrapolate out and go, wait, so this means if New England was playing at home on Sunday, we'd be talking about them nearly a double-digit favorite with, you know, 3 points for home field advantage, 3 points of that. I'm not sure that's a leap of faith we want to try and take in this game.
Touch high.
Yeah, I would say it's a little bit high. Little bit high.
Yeah, it's a little high, without question. This is a tough game for me. I know you like, and we'll just kind of just go out with the, I mean, we'll touch on this game, obviously. We got a ton of stuff to go on. But I think you like Pittsburgh a little more than I do, and I get it. The numbers is really high. And for me, situationally, 5 games in 6 weeks for New England on the road, over 12,000 miles traveled. At some point, that's got to rear its head. We saw on Monday night, well, I mean, they looked fatigued.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it kind of did rear its head on Monday night, and I know...
But now you're traveling again.
For me, hoping to try and get a number on the Steelers, I was hoping that the Dolphins, you know, put up a fight and were competitive, so they made the Patriots work, but I wasn't hoping that the Patriots were going to lose outright, given some of the things you mentioned, where the New England is 35-11 against the spread off a straight-up loss going all the way back to 2003.
Oh, Jesus. It's that good, huh?
Yeah, it's something astronomical. I believe those are the numbers that I pulled up. My trends are always subject to change, but, you know, I try and go through a few sources. So 35-11 is the number that I'm going with here.
I don't know if you want to admit to that. A trend is a trend. You can always finagle those, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can always poke holes in a trend. A trend is a great supporting argument, but it's not how your case should be predicated or built on if it was a criminal defense.
That is accurate. Where would we like to go from here?
I want to ask you a question that I think has been brought up, or maybe it's not been brought up by everybody. You know, people look at the New England dominance of Pittsburgh. They've won the last 4, 5 out of the last 6. We remember back in the playoff game where Pittsburgh appeared to be outclassed more or less from start to finish. But this Steelers offense right now, and we'll get to the defensive shortcomings in a second. This Steelers offense with where they are at this point in 2017, light years ahead of the addition that went to Gillette Stadium, didn't have a healthy Le'Veon Bell. Big Ben was leaning on guys like Sammy Coates and Kobe Hamilton to make plays. Significant upgrades in the likes of Martavis Bryant and Juju Smith-Schuster. How do we see the Steelers offense matching up against the New England defense, which had been great and steadily improving until they were exposed a bit last weekend and last Monday in the loss to the Miami Dolphins?
Pittsburgh should have more success here. This is so tough for me because I don't believe in Mike Tomlin.
No one believes in Mike Tomlin, including Steeler fans.
And that's what ends up happening in this game. We've seen where Pittsburgh has a lot of advantages in this game, and they just never come to fruition because in a week's prep, Belichick's masking those issues that he has or coming up with a game plan that's significantly better than Mike Tomlin. When I look at this, certainly you want to hit teams with explosive plays. For me, when I look at Pittsburgh's defense and how it's trending, I think they should want to play some keep away here. We know the Patriots, they play bend but don't break, and that's fine. If I'm the Pittsburgh offense, I'm saying let them play that defense. I'm going to hand the ball off here. We just have to punch it in for touchdowns when we get into the red zone. So everyone has been yelling to the high heavens about the improvement of New England's defense, and I've been saying, listen, I get it from a scoreboard perspective, and I understand some people will say that's all that matters. But when you look at a lot of these metrics, they're still extremely bad. The last 4 weeks, New England is the worst team in the NFL against the run. They allow 58% of runs to grade successful. This has to be a ground and pound effort here. You got to get Le'Veon Bell. This is a game where if Le'Veon Bell has 30 touches, 35 touches, I'm okay with it. That's got to be the key here. Now, Pittsburgh's D isn't any good, especially the last few weeks. You can also run on them. They're 31st in rushing success rate defense over that same four-game stretch. So which team can get the ground game established, cover the holes in their defense, I think will go a long way here.
When you look at some of the other stuff that's taking place in this game, and of course we know the Patriots typically bounce back very well off a defeat. Brady, I don't think these are the quotes you want from Tom Brady giving to the media if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, when he says, "I think everyone took this loss pretty hard. The locker room wasn't in very good spirits, and the plane ride home was very quiet. There's also the ability for us to learn from it and move forward, which is what we are going to need to do, because I think we've always felt that one loss shouldn't become two, two shouldn't become three, because that is when it really turns into bad seasons." Obviously, New England's offense last weekend, Payne, struggled. Didn't convert a third down, for the first time in a game since 1991. You could see how apparent it was without Gronk out there to stretch the middle of the field. What do we expect to see offensively from New England take advantage? As you mentioned, a Steelers defense that's struggling for an identity with no Ryan Shazier. Hayden appears to be a game-time decision, but it's a run defense over the last 2 weeks. It's given up just shy of 6 yards per carry. Obviously, both in wins.
Yeah, so the big thing here is, you alluded to that stat since 1991. They were bad on third down, but if you look, a lot of it was long yardage situations, and it was mostly to do with the ground game being unsuccessful on early downs. It forced Tom Brady into a lot of these third and long situations. We can say what we want. There are some question marks with a sore shoulder, a sore Achilles, a couple of those throws that he had on Monday Night Football. It looked like he was a little sore. And then, of course, he's missing his blankie and Rob Gronkowski. And I look at these numbers, and I get the record is very good. I know leading into Monday night, they'd won 9 straight without Gronk in the lineup. They're 20-6 overall without Gronk in the lineup. But just look at how Brady plays. Look at some of his numbers, and it's not coincidence. His numbers dip. His completion percentage drops about 5% with Gronk out. His yards per pass attempt dip about a full yard with Gronk out, and that's the matchup in this game. Gronk now operating over the middle without Ryan Shazier. Ryan Shazier, one of the best cover linebackers in the NFL. And so if you start to break down some of these metrics, Pittsburgh only allowed 2 touchdowns to tight ends this year. 57% of targets to tight ends were completed. That's minimal when Ryan Shazier was in coverage. Let's see what that looks like now. Without Shazier, with Gronk back coming off suspension, he's going to probably play with his hair on fire. That's the biggest thing. You could probably rewind the tape back when we broke this game down a year ago in the playoffs. I mean, right? It's going to come down to Mike Tomlin.
Well, that's what we said. We couldn't play. They couldn't come out and play a zone. Lo and behold, Tomlin comes out and plays his zone, and Brady had to be licking his chops and feasting. What we saw from the Patriots on Monday night was Miami being much more physical, kind of slowing down those receivers. They're not elite route runners by any stretch of the imagination without Gronk and without Julian Edelman. Gronk being out there changes some of the dynamics, but you have to imagine the Steelers are going to put pressure on those receivers, force them to beat them off the edge. But at the same time, you do wonder, the Steelers have been prone to giving up the big play without Hayden in the lineup. And even if he does play, I can't imagine he's anywhere close to 100%.
It's a quick recovery from his injury. He's chomping at the bit to get out there. He showed up at practice on Monday. Let's see if he plays. Let's see if he's 100%. It seems like he's coming back really quickly for a team that's going to be making a playoff run. I know how important this game is, but if he's not 100%, I'm not putting him out there. That's the biggest thing, though, right? We talk about, you know, New England potentially not having the best weapons outside, but Pittsburgh secondary isn't anything that's great or going to overwhelm you. I know they signed Kenny Britt. They finally get, they're an analytical group, obviously. It's the same mindset when Cleveland decided to sign Kenny Britt for all that money, and I kind of made a joke about how stupid that was. The analytics love Kenny Britt. Now, I think he'll be more successful with Tom Brady throwing to him. They finally have a big body target because it doesn't look like Malcolm Mitchell's coming back at any point this season. They had a chance to lift him off the IR, chose not to. So they actually get someone that can win a 50-50 ball. They get a big target, so that should help some. I don't know if he's going to play this week. We'll see. But they tried to do that last year, I believe, also with Floyd. It just didn't work out. Just a different dynamic, a different type of wide receiver. So we'll see. The total at 54, it's really high based upon how these two defenses are. There could be some weather at kick, about a 50% chance of some snow here. we'll see. But you could have a spot where you get two teams, and that's the key here. If you can figure out the game plan, you're gonna this total is going to go extremely one way or the other. Like, it's going to be an extreme difference. My feeling is both these teams are going to try to establish the run to protect some defense. That's kind of what I'm hearing. I would like to get another report closer as these teams start to actually, you know, execute their game plan in practice this week. But, man, this is a tough game. The other thing that we've seen is the improvement from Pittsburgh's offense, as you alluded to. A lot of it's come because of Big Ben.
He's looked good lately. The distant memories of that 5-interception performance against Jacksonville, where he looked like his career was done, he has looked like a much more polished passer, making the good decisions and getting the ball out, allowing his talented trio, of receivers to make big plays.
That's the biggest thing. Games 1-6, 7 touchdowns, 8 picks, about 250 yards passing. Games 7-13, 17 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, nearly 320 yards in the air. So he has certainly stepped things up, and they're going to need to outscore teams at this point. But at 54 in a game of this magnitude with some weather, and there's potential to see two teams try to cover up for their defense and run the ball, that'll be interesting to see here. So I don't love this game. I know you like it a touch more than me.
Yeah, but certainly I'm not sure it's enough. High. Yeah, I'm not sure it's going to be enough to get me to the window. 3.5 obviously would have been a no-brainer, and I can see maybe using Pittsburgh as a teaser leg. But I think 3 is going to be a delicate proposition, just because I think this is a chance to buy New England stock at the bottom of the market.
Yeah, that's true. So, I'd love to have something on this game. It's going to be a great game, but I don't see it. I think the casual fan's going to see what Pittsburgh hung on Sunday night. They're going to know about all these defensive injuries, and certainly it takes just one of these teams getting out early to force the other one to play catch-up, and we could be off to the races here. So that's how finicky this total is. But if we think it's going to be close, it's going to be contested, and early on I think we're going to try to see these two teams establish a ground game, because I think they're both going to think, hey, the winner of this game is going to be the more physical of the two teams. The winner of this game is going to be the team that can establish the ground game, maintain possession, help our defense. I think we're going to see some professional money on this under.
And it gets you a chance.
Just my gut feeling.
It gets you a chance from a live betting perspective, too, like you said. I mean, if there's a 2-touchdown margin at any point in the game and one of these teams has to just start chucking it around, they're not going to be afraid to throw caution to the wind. We know both of these sides more than capable of playing in comeback mode should the conditions allow for it. But Heinz Field this time of year, you do have to worry about it, but should be one of the crown jewels of the NFL regular season as the winner of this game, the inside track to wrapping up home field advantage throughout the AFC. And we've seen how difficult it is to go into New England and win. Pittsburgh would be best served to put forth their best effort on Sunday to be able to secure that. So even while the big game may not get a share of our wagering wallet, at least the way things stand right now, which game is going to offer you enough opportunity to get you to the window during the NFL's Week 15 slate?
Don't love the card this week. It's going to be small from us. You want to go to one of the Saturday games?
I think we can do a little Saturday and hope that we can spend our Sunday kick back, relax with a cocktail in hand.
A little Saturday night action. Let's go with, and not to scare people off this, but there is a slight difference opinion, as Dave Mason alluded to. I don't want to go down that road. Let's.
I thought you were going to start throwing haymakers.
No, I wasn't going to. It's not enough to scare me off the game, who is on it. So let's go with the LA Chargers. It is a pick'em at betonline.ag. So let's go with the LA Chargers.
And this is a double whammy game for us. A Chargers win here would not only cash the ticket on Saturday, but would also allow a lot of our loyal listeners to cash their regular season win total under for the Kansas City Chiefs as well.
Ah, that's right. I saw that question come across. And about hedging.
Yeah, there were some folks who probably thought this ticket was dead and buried. I can't fault them for asking about hedging, knowing that there's some opportunity here. But I don't see any reason to abandon the ship.
No, once you went from not having a chance to actually having an edge, you are not going to give up that edge. Not going to happen. So, can't do it. You can't do it.
Los Angeles Chargers. We know this team has been a thorn in our side going back 2 seasons, but it's a chance for them to do the right thing, get to the winner's circle, and cash our tickets against Kansas City.
I like that handicap. Just Chargers, do the right thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I can't go just do it. Nike has that trademark, so I mean, I have to try and, you know, do a little bit of different plan words, so to speak. So,
all right, let's wrap this up. You can get back to entering in all your entries for the
contest. You know, let's enter the bowl contest at betonline.ag.
The IP address scrambler is just steaming
right
now.
It is in full effect. Oh, it is in full effect right now. I think we've routed a couple entries through Zimbabwe, others through Perth, Australia, maybe a few through Bali. I mean, we're going to mix it up. Don't worry about it. We're going to mix it up. And I can use
all. That's the big Bitcoin market. Did you? I don't know if you experienced this last week. Last Sunday, did you poke around and have to do anything at Buckeye?
I actually did not poke around over there. Why? Is there a story I should know about?
Yeah, so, you know, we were going to lock in a couple bets, and all of a sudden I can't get anything into Buckeye. I'm like, what's going on here? Apparently, it's not just the United States political system. Buckeye and a few others were hacked by some Russians.
Russian hackers? Now, they usually wait till Super Bowl, the Russian hackers.
If you listen to their story, they're going to say they just had some server issues. But pretty good intel that couple of books were hacked.
Everybody in the sports betting space loves a good DOS attack on Sundays.
Fortunately, for sports books, it came not so good. It came later in the morning. For us, at that point, we had most of our action, and so it was a positive that didn't come earlier.
Always funny how that seems to work out. Every now and again, the good guys pull one over on the house. Special thanks, as always, to Dave Mason, who joins us every week here on the Bet the Board podcast. You can follow Dave on Twitter, at Dave Mason, B-O-L. You can follow Payne there as well, at Payne Insider. I am, of course, Todd Furman, and you can follow me on Twitter. Payne, any final parting shots, whether it's at me, Dave, the industry, you know, Bitcoin market, you name it, before we close up shop?
Hopefully a big day from Keenan Allen for our listeners' sake and your sake as well.
I do need a big day from Keenan Allen. Fantasy football doesn't dominate this discussion, but there will be some bragging rights on the line for me, to say the least. So looking to get to the finals. So good luck to all of our fantasy players out there. Good luck to all of the Bet the Board contestants in the football 5K free roll. And most importantly, best of luck to all of us going to the window with Chargers tickets for a Saturday night affair from Arrowhead. And hopefully, come about midnight Eastern, we'll see you at the window.